Only then would she realize that the world was a cold place, and her mother had very little idea of how to give her a good life. Before Au Radour-sur-Glane, I'd at least had a fantasy idea, a magical equation where Charlie plus Rose magically guaranteed a happy future for everyone. Now I didn't even have that. "Sorry," I said softly to the stomach that was still flat under my exploring fingers. "Your mom is every bit as helpless as you, baby girl." I don't know why I thought it was a girl, but I did. Baby Rose, I thought. And just like that, she had a name. Of course she did. Another rose. A rose of my own. A church bell chimed midnight. My stomach rumbled. The newly named little problem complaining that she hadn't had dinner. Strange how bodies kept stubbornly functioning in the middle of grief or guilt or shock. "That's one thing I do notice about you, Rosebud," I told my stomach. "You might not be showing yet, but I already need the lavatory twice as much." I got out of bed, pulled a sweater around me, used the lavatory, then found myself padding down the corridor. No light under Finn's door. I hoped he'd managed his apologies next door and come back to a dreamless sleep. I wondered if he regretted what we'd done in the back seat. I didn't. I hesitated outside his door, then tiptoed past to Eve's. Light showed in a yellow strip. She was awake. I struck the door open without knocking, striding inside. Eve sat at her windowsill looking down at the dark street. The dim light hid the ravages of her face. She could have been any age, tall and lean, with a stark profile and long, bare feet curled beneath her. She could have been the girl who went to Lille in 1915, except for those maimed and terrible hands lying in her lap. It all came back to those hands. It had all started with those hands. I remembered how the gorge had risen in my throat when I'd first seen them, that night in London. "Don't you Yanks know how to knock?" Eve's cigarette glowed at the tip as she raised it for a long drag. I folded my arms. "The thing is," I began, as though we were continuing a discussion already begun, "I don't know what comes next." Eve finally looked at me. She raised her eyebrows. "I had a plan, all broken down like a simple geometry problem. Find Rose if she was still alive. Have my baby. Learn to cope. I don't have a plan now, but I'm not ready to go home. I'm not ready to go back to my mother and start arguing all over again about how I'm going to live. I'm not ready to sit on a couch knitting booties. Above all, I wasn't ready to lose this little trio that had molded itself around Eve and Finn and me in a dark blue car. Part of me had had enough pain for a lifetime, and that part wanted to pull up stakes and run home, rather than take the risk that Finn would reject me tomorrow morning. But another part of me, small but increasingly demanding, just like the rosebud, wanted to stick this out. Whatever this was. I wasn't sure exactly what had pulled three of us together, or why it had turned out we were all chasing some variant of the same thing. Legacies left by lost women in past wars. I didn't have a destination anymore, or a goal at the end of this road. But we were headed somewhere, and I wasn't ready to abandon that journey. "I know what I want, Eve. I want time to figure out what comes next." I groped my way through this thicket as Eve sat, giving me no clue if my words were sinking in. I looked at her hands, taking a deep breath. "And I want to hear the rest of your story." Eve exhaled smoke. I heard the honk of a horn outside, some late-night driver. "You asked me at the cafe tonight if I had guts." I heard my own heart pounding. "I don't know if I do or not. At around my age, you were racking up medals in a war zone. I haven't done anything even remotely in your class. But I've got the guts not to go crawling home. I've got the guts to hear what happened to you, no matter how bad it was." I sat down opposite those steady eyes that were afire with remembered pain and savage self-loathing. "Finish the story. Give me a reason to stay."
"You want a reason?"
She passed me her cigarettes.
"Revenge."
The pack was slippery in my hand. "Revenge for who?"
"For Lily's arrest,"
Eve's voice in the dark was low, graveled, ferocious.
And for what happened to me, the night I was caught.
And as dark wore on to dawn, Eve told me the rest of it. Chapter 30. Eve. October 1915. It didn't matter what she said or didn't say. Whether Eve insulted René, answered him civilly, or refused to answer at all, he brought down the bust of Baudelaire in a sharp, precise movement and broke another finger joint. Even in the throes of agony, Eve could look down at her hands and count. She had 28 finger joints in total. René had so far gone through 9 of them.
I am going to give you to the Germans.
His metallic voice was level, but she could hear the emotions running taut below the surface.
First, however, you are going to talk to me. You are going to tell me everything I want to know.
He sat opposite, one finger tapping the dome of Baudelaire's head. The once pristine marble was now flecked with blood. He'd broken her first few joints without skill, clumsy at it, flinching at the noise of shattering bone. He was getting better at it now, though the blood still made his nostrils flare in distaste. You're as new to this torture business as I am, Eve thought. She had no idea how much time might have passed. Time had turned elastic, molding itself around the pulse of her agony. The fire flickered, and the two of them sat in leather armchairs with the table drawn between them, as they used to sit playing chess before retiring to bed. Only now Eve's hands were tied flat to that table's surface with the silk cord from one of René's robes. Tied so tightly it hurt. So tightly she had no hope of pulling free. She didn't try. Escape wasn't a possibility now. The only things possible were to remain silent and show no fear. So she kept her back straight, much as she wished she could curl over her hands and shriek. And she managed to smile for René. He would not know what that smile cost her.
You wouldn't rather play chess? She suggested. I let you teach me how to play, because Marguerite was too ignorant to know chess. But I'm actually rather good. I'd love to play a real match, instead of always losing on purpose, so you can feel superior.
Rage tightened his face. Eve barely had time to brace herself before the bust descended, and with it the now familiar sound of crunching bone. She screamed through clenched teeth, making René's chin jerk. She had told herself at first that she wouldn't scream, but she'd broken down by the 5th knuckle. This was the 10th. She couldn't pretend it didn't hurt. She couldn't look directly at her hand anymore either. From the corner of her eye she saw a mess of blood and black bruising and grotesquely twisted joints. All the damage so far was to her right hand. The left still sat beside it. Undamaged, curled into a fist.
Who is the woman with whom you were arrested?
René's voice was taut.
She can't be the head of the local network, but she might know him.
Inside, Eve smiled. Even now, René and the Huns had underestimated Lily. They underestimated anything female.
Her name is Alice Dubois, and she's a nobody. I don't believe you.
He hadn't believed anything out of her mouth so far. After the 6th knuckle went in a burst of blood, Eve had tried giving him false information, anything her imagination could make up, hoping it would make him stop. But he had not stopped, even when she pretended to acquiesce and started talking. He might be new to the business of torture, but he was keen.
What's the woman's real name? Tell me.
Why? Eve managed to spit.
You won't believe anything I say. Give me to the Germans and let them ask the questions.
At this point she wanted a German cell. The Huns might interrogate her, they might kick her about the floor, but they did not hate her personally as betrayed, outwitted René did.
Just turn me in, Eve prayed,
biting the inside of her lip to stifle a moan, tasting her own blood.
I will not turn you in until I've drained you of information.
René said as though reading her mind.
If I'm to overcome the distrust the Germans will harbor, knowing I took a spy for a mistress,
I must give them something valuable. If I can't, I may as well spare myself the suspicion altogether and just shoot you.
A pause.
It's not as though anyone will inquire about a disappeared waitress.
You can't kill me. He'll never get away with it.
Of course he could, but Eve began flinging doubts at him anyway. She'd already thought of this, the moment he pointed the pistol at her.
You think you could march me out of this study on my own 2 feet, off to some lonely spot where you can shoot me and leave me in the bushes to rot? I'd scream and struggle every step of the way. Someone would see.
I could kill you here in this room.
And then have to dispose of me somewhere, all by yourself.
Your German friends may owe you favors, but they won't dispose of a corpse for you.
You think you can lug a body out of your restaurant and get rid of it, all without someone noticing? This is a city of spies, René. German and French and English alike. Everyone sees everything. You'd never get away with it.
Oh, yes, he could. Money, luck, and a good scheme could always make murder possible. But Eve kept flinging up objections anyway, and she could see the doubts being sowed in René's eyes. He had no firm plan, and he was floundering here, for all his taut control.
You make brilliant plans, Eve thought.
But unlike me, you can't improvise worth a damn. René was so rarely surprised by other people. When he was knocked back onto his heels, he had no idea how to proceed. Eve filed that away. God only knew if she would ever be able to use it against him, but she still filed it away.
I could kill you, he said at last. But I'd rather drain you of information. If I can give the Germans a network of agents that has done so much damage in this area, they will be exceedingly grateful. Because as it stands, they don't have the evidence to sentence the 2 women they are holding to death.
Eve filed that away too. René smiled, fingers tapping Baudelaire's marble head. And she couldn't help the ice-cold shiver that flashed through her body, everywhere except her destroyed hand.
So, who was the woman, Eve?
She's no one.
Liar.
Yes, Eve spat. I'm a liar, and you know it. And you won't trust anything out of my mouth. You have no idea how to conduct this interrogation. This isn't about getting information from me. This is about you being outsmarted. You're destroying me because I was cleverer than you.
He stared at her, mouth tight, 2 spots of color gleaming high in his cheeks.
You are just a lying bitch.
Here's something you can believe.
Eve leaned forward over her own mangled hand.
Every moan I ever made in your bed was faked.
He brought the bust down. The first knuckle in her right thumb shattered, and Eve couldn't catch the scream in her teeth this time. Even as she screamed, she wondered if the neighbors would hear through the windows, the muffling brocade drapes, the thick walls. No one can help you, even if they hear. The darkened city outside might as well be on the other side of the world. Let me faint, Eve prayed. Let me faint. But René picked up the glass of water at his elbow and tossed it in her face, and the world cleared with a jolt.
Were you aiming from the start to seduce me?
His voice was tight.
You walked yourself into that trap, you gutless French pansy.
Eve managed a cough of a laugh, water sliding down her chin.
I was glad you did, though. The way you spilled your guts over a pillow. It was worth the 4 minutes of panting and moaning first.
She had only 3 knuckles still whole on her right hand, and René broke them all in a flurry of now expert blows. Eve shrieked. A sharp stench rose into the air of the rich study. Dimly, through the agony, she realized she had soiled herself. Urine and worse ran down the buttersoft leather of René's expensive armchair to the Aubusson carpet below. And even through the torture engulfing her hand, she was ground down by a bone-deep wave of shame.
What a dirty slut you are, he said. No wonder I insisted you take a bath before I ever fucked you.
Another wash of shame, but the fear was stronger. She was more terrified than she even knew was possible. Trapped. The word kept running through her brain like a mouse skittering before a stalking cat. Trapped.
trapped. No one was coming to help her. She was very possibly going to die here, the moment he tired of giving her pain and decided it was less trouble to shoot her than to turn her in. Her mouth was so dry with terror it felt like gravel.
"That's one hand," René said casually, setting down the bust.
His eyes glittered, perhaps with arousal, perhaps with his own brand of shame, the shame of being made a dupe. Either way, there were no more flinches or flared nostrils for the mess of the scene, the blood, the sounds and smells.
"You still have your left hand, and that's enough to get along. I'll spare the rest of your fingers if you start talking. Tell me who the woman arrested at the station is. Tell me who ran the network. Tell me why you returned to Lille when you had already escaped to Tournai."
Verdun, Eve thought. At least the message got out. She had to hope it would be worth it, that the message for which she and Lily were captured would save lives.
"Tell me those things, and I will bandage your hand, give you laudanum for the pain, and take you to the Germans. I'll even request a surgeon to set your fingers."
René reached out, stroking the side of her face. The path of his fingertips carried its own agony. A shiver of revulsion so deep, Eve's bones quivered.
"Just talk to me.
You won't believe me, even if I..."
"I will, pet. I will. Because I think I've broken you. I think you're finally willing to speak the truth."
Eve's eyes blurred. She wanted to tell him. That was the terrible part. The words were on her tongue. "I worked for Louise de Bettigny, codename Alice Dubois, and she ran the entire network." Lily, whose name Eve wouldn't know if they hadn't run into that German general on the train platform. If only that had never happened. "I worked for Louise de Bettigny, and she ran the network. A woman not 5 feet tall and brave as a lioness. And if she were here in my place, she would not say a word, no matter how many fingers she lost. Or would she?" How did one know what anyone would do when they had 14 joints systematically smashed? But Lily wasn't here in this chair with her hands bound in front of her. Eve was. Who knew what Lily would do? All Eve could be sure of was what Eve Gardner would do.
"Who is the woman?" René whispered. "Who?"
Eve wished she could smile mockingly. She had no more smiles to give. She wished she could summon a cutting phrase. She had no insults left. So she just spit blood in his face, spattering his immaculately shaved cheek.
"Go to hell, you cut-price collaborating cunt."
His eyes were all fire.
"Oh, pet," he breathed. "Thank you."
He reached tenderly for Eve's left hand. She curled her fingers into a fist, fighting him. But he wrenched her hand open and flattened it on the table, holding her like a vice as he reached for the marble bust.
"Fucking Baudelaire," Eve thought,
baring her blood-laced teeth at René. The terror was overwhelming.
"Who is the woman?"
René asked, enjoying himself now, bust poised over the little finger of her left hand.
"Even if you would believe me," Eve said, "I won't tell you." "You have 14 chances to change your mind,"
René replied, and brought the bust down. Time splintered after that. There was scarlet-edged pain, and then velvet black unconsciousness. René's metallic voice slid through both like a steel needle, stitching together the waking nightmare and the fainting relief. When a cup of water dashed in her face no longer brought her up from unconsciousness, he pressed a thumb precisely against one of her ruined knuckles until Eve woke screaming. Then he took his time wiping his fingertips on a clean handkerchief, and the questions would start again. So would the sound of breaking bones. The pain came and went, but the terror was constant. Sometimes she cowered with tears sliding down her face, and sometimes she was able to sit upright in her soiled chair and meet René's eyes. In either state, she had stopped answering his questions. The agony stole her ability to form words, or even a token laugh. There was a kind of relief when the last of her finger joints shattered. Eve looked down at the carnage that used to be her hands, and it felt like crossing a finish line. I suppose he might move onto my toes, she thought, remote inside her own shaking, sobbing shell. Or my knees. But the pain was already so enormous, the thought of more no longer had the power to frighten her. She had come this far. She could continue her silence. Because René couldn't hold her here forever, bleeding all over his Aubusson rug as his restaurant remained closed, as his profits died, and as his neighbors began to wonder about the noise coming from his apartments. At some point he had to give up this game. He would either give her to the Germans or kill her. Eve barely cared which anymore. Either meant that the pain would stop. Endure, the whisper came, in Lily's voice. Lily would never leave her. Endure him, little Daisy. Enduring the Germans, once they got hold of her, would be a different game. Unlike René, they would have the power to cross-check her lies, verify her truths. But she had no strength to worry about what agonies were to come. Only the agonies that were here. Endure. It was simple, really. No more need to pretend, to keep up a cover, to walk the razor's edge. Eve was off the razor and in among the teeth now. But at least there was no more need to lie. Just endure. So she did. She came out of one of her black faints. They were becoming more frequent. Not with a shriek of pain, but with a trickle of fire down her throat. René stood behind her, tipping her chin back as he held a glass of brandy to her lips. Eve coughed as a trickle went down, then tried to seal her mouth, but he rammed the glass against her teeth.
Drink this, or I will dig your eye out with an absinthe spoon.
Eve had thought the terror was at its peak, but there were always new summits, new levels of fear, and she went flying up them. She opened her lips and swallowed the brandy down, a hefty dose that burned her stomach. René sat back down opposite, eyes devouring her.
Eve, he said, tasting her real name. Aptly named. What a temptation you were. You never even needed to hand me an apple. I took you empty-handed and made a muse of you. Look at you now. I see reflected in your face horror and madness, icy and silent.
More goddamn Baudelaire, Eve managed to say.
From the sick muse, also apt.
They sat in silence. Eve waited for more questions, but René seemed content to gaze at her. She slipped down into the black pool, and this time woke slowly, swimming back to consciousness, the pain strangely blurred. René's chair was empty. The sinuous, sliding texture of the jade-green silk walls swam as Eve searched for him. She blinked as the walls expanded and contracted, like the eye of a kaleidoscope. She shook her head to clear it, fastening her gaze on the Tiffany lampshade. There was a peacock in the shade, tail fanned out in a thousand hues of blue and green glass. And Eve cried out as the peacock turned its head. Its glittering eyes found hers, and every eye in its tail feathers turned to look at her too. Evil eyes. Wasn't that what they called the eyes in peacock feathers? They reared up toward Eve, rippling out of the lampshade with a tinkling sound of moving glass. You're imagining it, Eve thought blurrily. But when she blinked again, the glass peacock was still there, perched on top of the lamp. Tail arrayed in a poisonous fan, all those accusing eyes staring. She was suddenly pouring sweat. The peacock spoke, its voice brittle as the glass it was made of.
Who is the woman you were arrested with?
Eve cried out again. Her mind had snapped. She'd gone utterly mad. Or René gave me something, she thought. Something in the brandy. But that thought flew away, gone before she could grasp it or make truth of it. The peacock spoke again.
Who is the woman, Eve?
I don't know. She didn't know anything anymore. She'd fallen sideways into a world of nightmares, and nothing was certain. The bust of Baudelaire sat on the table, his marble eyes open and filled with blood. Red drops slid down his marble cheeks.
Who is the woman? He asked,
words grinding harsh from his marble throat.
You do know.
There were lilies in a slender fluted vase on the mantel, long-stemmed and graceful. Evil-eyed lilies, fleur de mal, kept forever in glass. Eve's mouth burned, looking at the cool water around their green stems.
Thirsty, she murmured.
Her tongue had turned to dusty stone.
You shall have water when you tell me who the woman is.
Eve was still staring at the lilies, which stared back with bloody eyes.
To quench the terrible thirst that torments me, I'd have to swallow all the wine it would take to fill her grave.
Lily's grave. Lily's grave. Eve cried out. The pit was opening at her feet in the middle of the Aubusson rug, yawning black earth.
Le vin de l'assassin,
the marble statue said, naming the poem.
The murderer's wine. Very good, Eve. Who is the woman?
The chuckle sounded like René, but Eve couldn't see him. He was gone. She could see only the swimming green walls that breathed in rhythm with her hammering pulse, the peacock fanning its glass tail, and the bust with its bloody cheeks, the yaw of the pit at her feet. There was something down there at its bottom, some great, ravenous beast. She pulled against the rope about her wrists, and it wakened the pain in her hands. The beast was out of the pit, and it was eating her hands, chewing its way up her wrists. If she opened her eyes, she would see its gleaming teeth slowly devouring her broken fingers. She screamed again, pulling frantically against the ropes, and the agony roared. She was going to die of this pain, eaten alive and conscious to the end. She wept, head moving mindlessly back and forth, as the teeth of some rough slouching beast chewed languorously up her wrists.
Who is the woman, Eve?
Lily, she thought. Did the beast already kill you? She didn't know. She couldn't remember. Drops of sweat slid down her neck from her sodden hair.
Who is the woman?
Eve forced herself to open her eyes. She would look the beast in the face as it killed her. She looked down at her hands, expecting to see them clamped in a fanged maw, and then she shrieked. Her hands were not gone. They had changed somehow, the shattered fingers trying to regrow themselves. She had twice as many fingers, every one painted in blood and tipped not with a nail, but with an eye. All the eyes blinked at her in unison, accusing and blind. The beast is me, she thought in utter agony. The beast is me. Did I kill Lily? Did I kill her?
Who is the woman, Eve?
Did I kill her? Eve's lips parted blindly, and the mad, pulsing world went dark. Waves and waves of blackness and pain, terror and teeth.
Time to wake up, pet.
Light stabbed Eve's eyes as she peeled them open, but nothing stabbed like the silver needle of René's voice. She sat upright, a jolt of agony coursing through her hands. She was still roped to her chair, mouth dry as cotton and her skull splitting. René smiled, leaning against the window overlooking the street. He wore a grey morning suit, his hair was combed and oiled, and he had a teacup in hand. The light came through the window strong and bright. It was morning, though Eve couldn't tell which morning, if a night or two nights or a month's worth of nights had passed in that storm of pain and... Teeth. Pulsing walls, evil eyes, teeth. Eve's gaze flew wildly about the study, but it looked the same as it ever had. The green silk walls were not breathing. The peacock on the Tiffany lampshade stayed confined in glass. The lilies in their fluted vase were just flowers. Lilies. Lily. Eve's heart skittered, and she looked back at René. He smiled, taking a sip of steaming tea.
I trust you are more comfortable.
Eve looked down at her hands for the first time. They had been bandaged in clean cloth, bulky, anonymous mitts that hid the horror underneath. She still wore her soiled clothes, but her face and hair had been sponged. René had expended some effort to make her presentable.
Herr Rotzela is bringing his men to arrest you, Rene explained, glancing out the window to the street below. They should be arriving, or perhaps in half an hour. I thought you should look at least a trifle tidy for your captors. Some of these young officers are still squeamish when it comes to hurting women. Even English spies.
A relief crashed over Eve like an avalanche. The Fritzes are coming for me. She was not going to die here in this room. She was going to a German cell. Perhaps she would only come out of that cell to face a firing squad. But right now it was enough that that cell would not have René in it. He had given up tormenting her. Given up. I held out, she thought in a kind of numb wonder. I endured. In her mind, Lily smiled. Perhaps she would see Lily in prison, and Violette. If they could stand together, they could face anything that came, even a line of guns.
Your friend, René said as though reading her mind. Give her a hello from me if you should see her in the adjoining cell. She sounds like a rather extraordinary woman, your Louise de Bettigny. I'm sorry never to have met her.
He sipped his tea, standing there in the sunlight. Eve stared at him, the marks of a comb in his hair, the fresh shave of his jaw.
You told me, he said. If you're wondering.
I told you, she tried to say through numbed lips. I told you nothing. Rien. Such a small word and it would not come out. Her tongue had frozen fast.
Louise de Bettigny, alias Alice Dubois, alias a dozen other names. You listed them all. The German commandant will be very happy to realize just who it is Herr Rotzela has in custody. The head, in fact, of the local network. Astounding to think it was a woman.
Eve just repeated, I told you Her faulty tongue was failing on the most important word she ever had to speak, stuttering in a panic so far past ordinary terror that she barely felt it at all. It wasn't a reaction her body was big enough to contain. It just hovered over her like a floating mountain, ready to flatten her utterly. I told him nothing. But she thought of the inexplicable fever dreams, the bust of Baudelaire coming to life. René nodded, doubtless seeing the expressions chasing across her face. For so long she'd kept her face locked against him like a vault. Now it had broken open, and he was flipping through her every thought and emotion like pages of a book.
You were right in one thing you told me yesterday. I had no way to pass truth from lie in anything you told me. But opium,
swirling the tea in his cup,
induces strange visions when administered in quantity. It also reduces resistance. You certainly seemed to see some strange things last night. It made you very pliable in the end.
Eve could only repeat like a broken record. I told you
No, my pet. You babbled like a brook. You gave me your friend Louise, for which I am duly thankful.
He toasted her with the teacup.
And so are the Germans.
Betrayed. The word howled through Eve's head.
Betrayed?
No, she would never have betrayed Lily. He knows her name. Where did he learn it but you?
No. Betrayer.
No.
Really?
René went on idly, ignoring Eve's silence.
If I'd known opium was the way to make you so agreeable, you might still have your hands in one piece. And I'd have a study that didn't smell like piss. How I'm going to get the stains out of my aubusson, I don't know.
His smile deepened. There was something edged and restless about it.
But perhaps a ruined rug is worth it. I enjoyed smashing you up, Marguerite. Eve. You know, I don't think either of those names suits you.
Lily in front of a wall, blindfolded, as rifles were leveled.
Betrayer. Betrayer.
Evelyn Gardner, you weak, foul coward.
I have a better name for you.
René put down his cup, drifted closer. He leaned down to press his cheek against Eve's, and she inhaled the scent of his cologne.
My dear little Dugas.
Eve's head darted like a snake. She was roped to the chair, and her hands swathed in mitts, but she caught René's lower lip with her teeth and bit deep. She tasted the coppery tang of his blood, bitter as her own failure, sawed her teeth harder and harder, even as he shouted and began wrenching at her hair. It was the last savage kiss between source and spy, captor and captive, collaborator and betrayer, their mouths locked together by teeth and blood. René had to tear himself loose. Eve's chair crashed over, and her head hit the floor with a force that blurred the world in sickly pulses.
You vicious bitch, René hissed,
his collar blood-spattered, his eyes black with fury, his metallic voice finally rising out of its smug, inflectionless calm.
You spying English cunt. You half-breed shopgirl. You shrewish, thieving whore,
he went on, his elegant vocabulary broken down to the most obscene gutter slang that could be dredged out of the French language, his mouth scarlet with his own blood, as though he'd been eating souls. And so he had. He had been eating souls and hearts and lives these past months, anything for profit. And René Bourdelon now looked like the ravening beast he was. But Eve felt no flicker of triumph for breaking him. She too had broken, with a snap far more audible and final than the wet crunch of her destroyed knuckles. She lay there roped to her fallen chair, weeping and weeping. But there were not enough tears in the world for her shame and her horror. She was a Judas. She had betrayed her best friend in all the world to her worst enemy in all the world. I want to die, Eve thought as René pulled himself together, retreated to the window angrily, stuffing a wad of cloth against his mouth. I want to die. She was still thinking it, still weeping when the Germans came, when they untied the ropes and hauled her away. Chapter 31. Charlie. May 1947.
Jesus, Finn said softly.
I'd been too frozen by Eve's recitation to realize he'd come in.
No, Eve said in her low, graveled voice. Jesus wasn't anywhere near that green-walled study. Only Judas.
She reached for her packet of cigarettes, but it was long empty.
It's the study I dream about. Not René's face. Not the sound of my fingers breaking. The study. Those breathing walls. And the Tiffany peacock. And that bust of Baudelaire.
She trailed off, her averted profile harsh. Somewhere in the distance I heard a church bell chime, and we all listened to the doleful sound. Finn with his shoulder jammed against the wall, arms folded across his chest. Me curled up on the window seat. Eve across from me, motionless as a statue, hands folded in her lap. Those hands. From the beginning I'd wanted to know what had happened to her hands, and now I knew. They were the price she'd paid for serving her country, the war wounds that reminded her every day of how she'd broken. An uncompromising heart like hers wouldn't accept that she wasn't to blame for succumbing. She just saw cowardice, and it shamed her enough to make her refuse the medal she'd earned. I looked down at my own unmarked hands, imagining a marble bust smashing down over and over until my fingers looked like Eve's, and a bone-deep shudder went through me. Eve, I heard myself say, low-voiced, you are the bravest soul I have ever met. She brushed that aside. I broke. A little opium in a brandy glass and I spilled my guts. Something about that bothered me. It didn't entirely add up. And I opened my mouth to say why, but Finn was already speaking, his voice soft and angry.
Don't be a Dobor gardener. Everybody breaks. Hit people in the right place. Find the thing they care for. Hurt them long enough. We all crack. There's no shame in that. There is, you soft-headed Scot. Lily was condemned at trial because of it, and so were Violette and I. So blame René Bourdelon for torturing it out of you. Blame the Germans for handing down the sentence. Oh, there's enough blame in this withered heart for all of us.
Her voice was ruthless in its condemnation, and she still didn't look at us.
René and the Germans played their part, but so did I. Violet never forgave me, and I don't blame her.
What happened to Lily? I asked. Was it the firing squad after all?
I could see her standing up against the wall, smiling and gallant under her blindfold, and my gorge rose. Eve had made Lily every bit as real and precious to me as Rose.
No, Eve said. It was too soon after Cavill's execution. Too much outcry for the Germans to shoot another woman point blank. It was quite another fate for the three of us.
Eve shivered as if a rat had run across her nerves.
But you survived, I said, dry-mouthed. Violet survived.
Did Lily? Enough about the trial and the rest of it. It's not a tale for dark nights, and anyway, it's not important at the moment.
Eve pushed it away almost visibly, whatever it was, and fixed her eyes on mine.
What's important now is René Bourdelon. You know what he did to me, what kind of man he was. When the war ended and I came home, I had every intention of returning to Lille and blowing his foul head off. I've been dreaming about it for years. Captain Cameron scuttled that. Lied to my face the day I arrived in England, saying René was dead.
Her voice was sliding back from hoarse emotion into her usual crispness, the further she got from the recitation of her own torture.
Cameron probably thought I'd have peace that way. That man was too damned noble to understand vengeance. How it keeps you up night after night, shaking with hatred. Dreaming that if you can only taste blood in your mouth, you'll sleep without dreams.
Finn gave a single fierce nod. He understood. So did I. I thought of the German soldiers who had shot Rose and her daughter, and my hatred was violent and instant.
Well, my maybe nearly 30 years
Eve's gnarled fist struck hard against her own knee, and she jerked the halted word free.
30 years late. But I'm going to settle accounts. René owes me.
Eve's eyes never left mine.
He owes you, too.
I blinked.
Me?
You say you want a reason to stay on this search, Yank, and I'll give it to you. But you have to ask. Do you really want to hear this?
I just blinked again. We'd all been so thoroughly entrenched in Eve's past, I felt like an actor being dragged on stage into the wrong play.
Yes, I want to hear. But I don't understand. I've never met René Bourdelon.
He still owes you. He did a lot more than just employ that cousin of yours.
Eve sounded concise as a field officer now.
I needed to find out what René's been up to since coming to Limoges as René de Malassis, so I asked Major Allenton. He's an idiot, so of course he advanced right up the ranks over the years. Did quite a bit of work during the Second War. I might have been involved in some of it, and that gave me a way to start the conversation that finally worked itself around to René de Malassis. With a generous application of wine and flattery, Allenton positively dripped information over dinner. Some of it public knowledge, some of it very private. Thank God for those loose-lipped idiots.
Allenton coordinated with a number of French resistance networks in the Second War, arranging the drop of supplies, collecting information. It was widely known that Monsieur de Malassis was a profiteer in Limoges. For political favors, he passed information to the Nazis and to the milice, working for those scum in Vichy.
Eve reached for her satchel and fished out something which she proffered by the tips of two misshapen fingers.
That's René in 1944. He was a person of interest, so Allenton had a photograph.
I took it. A photograph taken at some elegant dinner with local worthies and Nazi officials lined up for the flash. A man on the far left had been circled, and I peered close. At last, Eve's nemesis had a face. But not the elegant, wolf-like one I had envisioned from her stories. An old man in a dark suit stared back at me, lean-faced, his silver hair swept back from a high forehead. Age had turned him stalk-boned rather than stout. But he wasn't frail. The silver-headed cane hooked over one arm swung like an accessory. I examined the faint smile on that line-bracketed face, the way he held the stem of his wine glass between two fingers, and wondered if I was simply projecting the past when I thought his photographed gaze looked cold, cold, cold.
Finn leaned over my shoulder for a look and let out a soft curse. I knew what he was thinking. This old man had destroyed Eve in his green-walled study. She'd turned into a bitter crone crouched in the wreckage of nightmares and whiskey, while he had gone on to make more money, befriend more German invaders, destroy more lives. Shoot a young sous-chef in the back for thieving. Sit at banquet tables glittering with crystal and swastikas. And smile as he got his picture taken. I looked at his face, and I hated him. He was widely known in the Second War as a profiteer, Eve continued quietly. But what isn't widely known is that he was partially responsible for a for a massacre. It filtered up to Major Allenton, through sources in the Milice, that a civilian informer in Limoges passed information about French resistance activity in a small town nearby. Specifically, he gave the Milice a girl's name, and stated that she and others in the resistance had kidnapped and killed a German officer. That officer was a close friend of SS Sturmbannführer Deichmann, of the Der Führer Regiment, the Das Reich Division. When the Milice passed this tip on, and the captured officer was confirmed killed, everyone probably expected Deichmann to arrest and hang the girl. But he decided to make an example not just of her, but her entire town. Eve's eyes never left me. The girl was going by the name of Hélène Joubert. The town was Oradour-sur-Glane. René was the informer who reported both. Dread swept over me. I remembered Madame Rouffanche's voice saying, Hélène Joubert, she said her name was. We called her Rose. It's not clear if your cousin actually was resistance, Eve went on. She certainly had connections if the man who fathered her child was involved. She wasn't listed as active in any of the networks Allenton knew, though that's not proof. Maybe she had nothing more to do with them after bearing her child. Or maybe she passed on information from her workplace in Limoges. Who knows? Whether she spied on the Nazis who came to Lilité or not, I think René decided your Rose was suspicious. He would have been rather fearful at that point about eavesdropping waitresses. A tight, bitter smile. Even if she was resistance, your cousin wouldn't have been involved in the kidnapping and killing of any German officers. That would have been an operation for more experienced fighters. But René wanted her gone, So he made sure hers was the name to be reported, I whispered. Why wouldn't he just fire her if he wanted her away from his restaurant? He probably viewed it as safer to have her permanently disposed of. He could have shot her himself. Certainly by then he had no qualms about pulling a trigger. But he might not have felt he could do such a thing again. Not after the public incident with the sous-chef. That might have cost him too many Nazi favors. So he just passed on your cousin's name, and the town where he already knew she went on weekends, and took care of her that way. Eve tilted her head. In fairness, he couldn't have known the entire town would be massacred. But even had the Germans been merciful to the rest of Oradour-sur-Glane, your cousin would undoubtedly still have been rounded up and executed by the SS. Because of René Bordelon. My skin was crawling. That photograph in my hand burned me. I looked again at that smug old face. There is no vengeance to be had against the Germans who actually ended your cousin's life, Eve said. Sturmbannführer Deichmann, the man who ordered the massacre, died a matter of weeks afterward in the Allied assault. That's a matter of military record, confirmed by Allenton. The soldiers who carried out his orders would have either died with him, been disseminated back to Germany after the war, or still linger on in prisoner of war camps. None were named and brought to trial for what happened at Oradour-sur-Glane, either at Nuremberg or afterward. And without another mass trial, it's unlikely you'd ever find out which man fired the shots that killed your cousin. Those men are probably beyond your reach. René is not. He didn't pull the trigger, but he certainly did his best to arrange your cousin's death. I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. I couldn't even breathe. I sat staring down at that smug face. Oh, Rose. I'm going to track down René Bordelon, Charlie Sinclair, and make him pay for what he's done. Eve flexed her destroyed hands. Are you coming with me? Part 4 Chapter 32
Eve. March 1916. Brussels. The trial was over in a single day. For Eve, those grinding hours in the imposing room passed in a blur. Violette stared straight ahead when they were all marched in under guard, and Lily cast her mobile gaze all around the high glass ceiling and curial chairs, and proud Belgian lions. But Eve focused downward on her muscle-skinned, half-healed fingers clenched together in front of her. They still hurt savagely, despite the passage of the intervening months. The pain seemed far more important than the drone of German words overhead. More formalities as the other officials filed in. Eve's eyes traveled from face to face. German soldiers, German officials, German clerks. But no Frenchmen, no civilians allowed in to view the spectacle. René Bordelon was not here to crane his gaze at the ruin he had made of her. And for that, Eve was grateful. She dreaded seeing his face more than she dreaded hearing her sentence. Had she seen him, she knew she would have collapsed, shivering to the thick carpet. "I did not used to be so small and fearful," she thought as one of the judges harangued them. She had been this broken thing for months now, lying in her cell, trembling and weeping at any provocation, and she still wasn't used to it. The only thing fierce about Eve anymore was her self-loathing. "Betrayer." The whisper was a part of her blood now. It pulsed with every heartbeat, poisonous and matter-of-fact. "Betrayer." Lily knew of her betrayal. They'd barely been allowed to speak to each other these past months in their separate prison cells in Saint-Gilles. But Eve had bribed one of the guards to tell Lily what she'd done. She couldn't have carried the weight of that betrayal as a lie. Eve's heart hammered now as she gazed across the room, forcing herself to look past Violette's stolid profile to where Lily sat. "Spit on me," Eve begged silently. "I have earned it." But all Lily did was smile. Her small face flashed one of its mischievous looks, as though she didn't sit ringed about by hostile guards, as if she was still a free woman. And she put two fingers to her lips and blew Eve a kiss. Eve flinched as though the kiss were a blow. They were questioned one at a time, not allowed to hear each other's testimony. Violette first, her real name of Leonie von Hauter, spoken for the first time in Eve's hearing, though she still couldn't think of Lily's lieutenant by any name but Violette. She at least viewed Eve as the traitor she was. The other woman's stare was hate-filled as Eve filed out under guard. Eve was brought in to be questioned next, and she didn't bother with a defense. Everyone here knows what the outcome will be. She stood silent under the harangue of German, feeling her hands throb, breathing the stale smells of hair oil and shoe polish. And soon enough she was let out again. Lily was the one they most wanted. She could sense the liquid ripple that went over the room in anticipation, almost savage, and wondered if such a ripple had gone over the viewers in the Colosseum before the lions were released. The lions in this room were gold and carved, but they could still levy death. The judges disappeared. Half an hour ticked past, measured by a deliberate clock. And it was over. Eve, Lily, Violette, and several lesser defendants were all arrayed before the court, and a vast silence fell. Eve's mouth went dry as paper, and she could feel herself trembling. At the corner of her eye, she saw Violette's fingers twitch as though she wanted to reach for Lily's hand. Lily stood like a statue. The words rolled out in nasal German.
"For Louise de Bettignier, death. For Leonie von Hout, death. For Evelyn Gardner, death."
Ripples crossed the room, and Eve felt as though she'd been kicked in the chest. Not by dread. Relief. She looked down at her mangled hands with blurring eyes and thought, as she'd thought while weeping on the floor of René's green-walled study, "I want to die." No more months of cells and monotony, pain and morphine and guilt. Just the mouths of the guns arrayed before her. The imagined sight was beautiful. A ripple of gunfire and then... nothing. But before her heart could squeeze in relief, Lily stepped forward. She spoke in soft, perfect German, the only time in the entire trial she spoke in the language of the enemy.
"Gentlemen, I ask you not to shoot my friends. They are young, and I implore your mercy for them.
her blonde head tilted.
Me. I want to die well. I accept my sentence.
Violette spoke in clear, contemptuous tones, cutting her leader off.
You can shoot me, but I ask you before I die, and you cannot refuse me. Do not part me from Lily, from Louise de Bétigny.
Eve heard her own voice.
Or me.
A row of German faces looked down at them, and Eve saw blank confusion there. She'd seen the same expression from their guards at Saint-Gilles. Bewilderment, looking at tiny Lily and stuttering Eve, and Violette with her glasses like a schoolteacher, wondering how any of them could possibly be spies.
The Boche have held us for months, Eve thought, and they still don't know what to make of the Fleur du Mal.
The thought gave her a flicker of savage pride for a moment, something to straighten her shoulders before the guilt flattened them again. The three women of the Alice Network were allowed to stand as further discussion carried on in whispers among the German officials. Another hour crept past. Eve's hands throbbed. Another announcement. Another kick resounding dully through her chest. Only this was not relief. This was despair. The trial was done.
So, Lily said, they will not shoot us.
Violette was still shivering in reaction as they waited in the courtyard between their guards. Eve stood numb and upright, but the news seemed to have nearly shattered Violette, who had looked braced for a bullet right then and there in the courtroom.
They will send us to Germany, she muttered.
The sentence had been amended. They were all to suffer 15 years hard labor in Siegburg prison.
15 years? Lily wrinkled her nose. No. We labor until the victory of France. That is all.
I wish it was the line of guns, Eve heard herself saying. Violette's red-rimmed eyes bored into her, bitter and accusing.
You deserve the guns, she said,
and spat full into Eve's face.
Judas!
The guards intervened, dragging Violette a few paces away. Eve stood unmoving, letting the warm spittle trickle down her cheek, and the other guards let Lily approach, drawing back a little. Only a tiny oasis of privacy, but it was the most a prisoner could expect.
Sorry, little Daisy.
The touch of a worn cuff against Eve's cheek, wiping her clean. She almost flinched at the sensation. She hadn't been touched kindly in so long.
Violette takes it hard.
She hates me, Eve said without rancor.
For betraying you.
Pah. Who knows how the Boche got my name or found out I ran the network? You don't remember giving it up, opium or no opium.
Lily shrugged in complete indifference.
I was identified. How that happened doesn't matter.
It does, Eve stated. A smile.
Not to me.
Eve nearly wept.
Do not forgive me, she wanted to cry. Please do not forgive me. Forgiveness hurts so much more than hatred.
Violette was allowed to rejoin them, glaring but quiescent, and Eve welcomed her silent loathing. They all stood in silence, waiting for the cars that would take them back to their cells. From there it would probably be a matter of days until they were transported to Siegburg prison.
Siegburg.
Eve had heard horror stories of that place. She looked east toward Germany, and saw the other women looking too, as though the prison's dank walls were already in sight.
Do not think about it, mes anges.
Lily came up between Eve and Violette, putting an arm around each and squeezing hard.
Enjoy the present. You are both here, and I am close to you.
Eve leaned her head on Lily's shoulder, and they all stood in the pale March sunlight, waiting to be taken away. Chapter 33 Charlie June 1947 Through the remainder of the night, I stared at the photograph of a monster and tried to make sense of what he'd done. You got Rose killed, I thought, over and over. You got Rose killed. An SS officer had given the order to fire, and a German soldier had pulled the trigger. But my cousin would never have been targeted at all if not for this man in his elegant suit and silver-headed cane. I hadn't been able to answer Eve's question. I was too shocked, taking the photograph and stumbling back to my room and